We looked last week and we saw that we have all kinds of hopes, don't we? And a lot of them aren't based on anything much more than just wishful thinking. It's what we'd like to happen rather than any more substance than that. And we saw that actually when it comes to the Easter story, and when it comes to the hope that's built on that, that there's more substance to it than just wishful thinking. That there was more than a corpse. Or actually, when the women got to the tomb that we saw last week, there was less than a corpse. There wasn't even a corpse there. Today, we're looking at this idea that it's more than just a story. It really is a hope worth having. Now, for some people, of course, a story is great. I mean, it's a story. That stories can be fun. Stories can be harmless. It's just that the New Testament, it's got a harder edge than that. It says, if it's only just a story, it's worthless. It's worthless. If Christ has not risen, we are of all people most to be pitied, is what the apostle writes. We've wasted the only life we've got. So, with that in mind, let's have a look at this familiar incident on the Emmaus Road. It's one of those instances in which there are so many layers, one of which will no doubt speak to different ones of each of us. But imagine it as a film, will you, for a moment? You know, I don't know what kind of movies you look for, but at first glance, this is, this is comedy. This is comedy. You know the kind of comedy where the gag is based on the viewer knowing what is going on, while the bumbling hero muddles through, stumbling from one catastrophe to another. You know, Rowan Atkinson or Hugh Grant would play that kind of hero really well. And you can't read this incident with too straight a face on. I'm sure Luke saw the funny side of what was going on. Come back to where it begins in verse 13. Now, that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and they were talking with each other about everything that had happened. And as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. You see, the scene is set, and for the next couple of hours, the two are talking about Jesus without realizing they're talking to him. Now, if it was a pantomime, we'd all be shouting, "He's beside you! He's beside you!" It's that kind of scene, isn't it? I mean, Luke has to be enjoying a good chuckle when he writes verse 18. One of them, named Cleopas, asked Jesus, "Are you the only one who doesn't know the things that have happened?" And as they talk on, you suddenly realize how many pieces of the jigsaw they've got without knowing how to put them together. So in verse 19, they knew Jesus was at least a powerful prophet. In verse 21, they realized it was the third day after his crucifixion, as if that was significant, as if they'd remembered Jesus predicting his death, and 3 days later he will rise. They knew about the women finding an empty tomb in verses 22 and 23. But it didn't seem to register much with them. Mind you, we saw last week that others thought their story was nonsense too. No doubt sexism was alive and well in those days. And as so often, the women will have the last laugh. Women, angels, disciples, some of our companions, verse 24, all speak of an empty tomb, but these two still don't get it. When and if Cleopas ever bought Luke's bestseller, he would have read that he went down in posterity as the man who looked Jesus in the face and said, verse 24, they did not see Jesus. Now, even the extraordinarily patient Jesus says in verse 25, "How foolish you are, how slow." And not even Jesus' Bible teaching makes the penny drop. Now, you know, we enjoy laughing at other people's slowness, and it doesn't always have to be mean, does it? But there's a serious point to this comedy. Luke seems to have known the couple. He probably interviewed them for his story. He names Cleopas, presumably because Cleopas was known in the wider Christian community when Luke was writing. And the gospel writers are not precious about their leaders. See, Peter's blundering, Thomas is doubting, everyone's deserting. that they know discipleship and ministry come from grace, not merit. And here, as he smiles to himself and writes their story, Luke is wanting us to know you don't have to be the sharpest knife in the box to be a disciple. How slow. Yes, they were. But they got there. God's grace has room for the thick and the slow to get it. That is an encouragement. Quite possibly it's an encouragement for someone in the room here this lunchtime, but we won't go into the details. If how slow, then, is one theme that runs through the story, it's not the only one. And if one strand has a comic element and brings a smile to your face, another is very different. It's more tragedy than comedy. We had hoped is the dominant idea in Cleopas's mind on this walk, isn't it? It comes there in verse 21. We had hoped he was the one. They'd obviously invested so much in Jesus, and Good Friday had dashed their hopes cruelly. His death, crucifixion, execution had locked them into despondency. And when you've been burnt, when you've had your hopes dashed, you don't trust again very easily, do you? I mean, you can understand it. I was given a book a little while back called Do No Harm. It's stories of life, death, and brain surgery, is its subtitle. A friend gave me the book on brain surgery, a palliative care nurse friend. I was worried what the hint was behind it, but my brain only needs surgery to cure it. Very well written, frankly honest story of a brain surgeon and his triumphs and his failures. And he wrote one place about an operation that had gone wrong and left a young mother partially paralyzed. And he said this, I suspect we can all empathize with it. He said, when you approach a patient you've damaged, it feels as though there is a force field pushing against you, resisting your attempts to open the door behind which the patient is lying, the handle of which feels as though it were made of lead, pushing you away from the patient's bed, resisting your attempts to raise a hesitant smile. It's hard to know what role to play. The surgeon is now a villain and perpetrator, or at best incompetent, no longer heroic and all-powerful. It's much easier to hurry past the patient without saying anything. I went into the room and sat down in the chair beside her. How are you? I asked lamely. She looked at me and grimaced, pointing wordlessly with her good left arm to her paralyzed right arm and then lifting it up to let it fall lifeless onto the bed. I've seen this happen after surgery before, and the patients got better, although it took months. I really do believe you will get largely better. She said, I trusted you before the operation. Why should I trust you now? You feel here Cleopas and his friend are saying, we trusted before the crucifixion. How can we trust now? How can we trust now? We had hoped, they say, he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. That's what Messiah was meant to do, and he can't pull it off now. Now, I don't know whether Cleopas had been there on Palm Sunday and, you know, sung the nationalist songs and waved the nationalist flags and put the palms down in front of the donkey, but certainly the Old Testament hopes of a liberator who would free his people from occupying powers and end the exile would have been in their mind. We had hoped. Now, these three words sum up the ashes of many a person's faith, don't they? Not recruiting Jesus to a nationalist cause very often, and not even his death that brings disillusionment anymore, because we know the story before we begin these days. It's others' deaths that often do. We had hoped. Why, we'd even prayed when our friend was ill. One thing I asked of God, and no. It's not his plans being scuppered that dash our hopes so much as ours. We had hoped, you know, if God healed my child, if God mended my marriage, if God only opened that opportunity for me, well, then I might have. We had hoped. We'd hoped there was a God living and relevant and a force for good in the world of the 21st century. We thought of him like that once. We talked of him like that. We sat about him even. We had hoped, but not any longer. Do you know people like that? Do you know anything of that sadness and bewilderment? And for some, the sadness has now become a sneer or even a patronizing smile. You know, we had hoped. Yes, we were naive too once. But we've grown out of it now. And yet for others, there just remains the heavy heart of a broken idealism. We had hoped he was the one. And their hopes hadn't been without basis in the Bible. And Jesus takes them through it. I doubt he's just peppering them with proof texts, but for a couple of hours that it would have taken them to walk to Emmaus, he took them on a tour of the Old Testament from Genesis to Malachi. Sadly, there are no tapes available of that talk. You can't download it from the internet. But he explained what was promised about the Christ, the Messiah. A figure of great power and justice, yes, a figure to rescue his people and end their exile, certainly, but as he would have pointed out from the Passover in Exodus to the suffering servant of Isaiah, a figure that would rescue through sacrifice, who would taste God's judgment for himself so that his people could escape it. Whose road to triumph was deliberately rooted through the death he would face for his rebellious people. Verse 26, did not the Christ have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? Well, Cleopas is exposed to all the scriptures and it changes his expectations. We had hoped he was going to be the one to redeem Israel, and he'd assumed Jesus' death meant he couldn't be the one. Now he heard death was part of the deal. Written into Messiah's job description. Integral to his rescue passage. It meant God's Messiah was working off a different agenda to Cleopas. When faced with disillusionment, in order to prevent disillusionment, I have to keep exposing myself to the scriptures. Will we keep checking our expectations against God's? Will you judge God by your plans or his? Will I view God in the light of my vision or his? Have we let Easter truth speak into our disillusionment? The Christ had to suffer these things and then enter his glory. How slow. Yes, but Easter encourages those who struggle to see it. We had hoped, but Easter speaks up for the disillusion. And then there is one more strand. Because this incident doesn't end in despair and disillusionment. It finishes as a feel-good movie. A growing sense of excitement as the incident reaches its climax. They reach Emmaus, Jesus is persuaded to stay, and as he breaks bread, verse 31, their eyes were opened and they recognized him. We're not quite told how. A familiar gesture, they see the nail marks in the wrists. They've recovered their perspective. They see things for what they were, and Jesus for who he is, a risen Messiah. And it makes sense of their experience. Verse 32, weren't our hearts burning within us? And whatever, they can't keep the truth to themselves. You see, in spite of the fact it's nearly evening, it's getting late, the light is going. Well, it's true. The Lord is risen, they say. And they've got to tell. I heard a while back of a woman who, after some searching, several Bible studies, put her faith in Jesus. And a minister said she should tell someone what she'd done. I imagine meaning a family member, a neighbor, a friend. And so she went home, she got out her address book and picked up her phone and she worked through it.
Yeah.
Family, friends, neighbors, butcher, baker, candlestick maker. 3 hours later, she sat back finished with a trail of excited, bemused, puzzled friends behind her. Cleopas doesn't have a phone, which was probably a mercy, but he gets his coat on. And the day may be nearly over, but verse 33, they got up and returned at once to Jerusalem, and they rushed to tell their friends and share the news, because Easter has that effect. It can't keep itself to itself any more than the grave could keep Jesus to itself. But Cleopas, you discover, once he's raced all the way back to Jerusalem again, doesn't get a chance to tell his story, and he finds he's already too late for it to be news, because, verse 33, they say it's true. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, it is true, the Lord has risen. It is true, the final Easter phrase. You see, we had hoped Jesus was the Messiah. It's true, the Lord has risen. Jesus is Messiah, King, Rescuer, Lord. Easter turns, we had hoped, into, we still hope. We are still confident He is the one. We had hoped in sins forgiven. He was pierced for our transgressions. It is true, and it brings hope where we've no right to any. We had hoped death would not have the final word. It's true. The Lord is risen. And death doesn't have the final word. And Jesus not only promised, He blazed the trail, He pioneered the route. Yeah, I don't know which phrase is your Easter. How slow. Well, if that's you, remember God includes the slow. We had hoped. Remember, Easter restores hope. It is true. The Lord has risen. Let Andy Maycock sum it up for us. He's had cerebral palsy since birth, as Andy. He was brought up as a Christian, didn't accept it for himself. He knew all the theory, saw it as a harsh religion based on reward and punishment. If you were a naughty boy, you went to hell. If you were a good boy, you didn't. And one day, as he met with Christians and he went on a kind of course a bit like this, Life Explored, he saw Christianity from a different perspective, and it all made sense. Changed his attitude towards his disability. He said, I used to think, how can there be a God if I'm like I am? How dare He make me like I am? I'm glad I've had the opportunity to look at things like Jesus did, though. He said, He suffered, He had adversity, but look how much He loved. Jesus has changed me from being a victim of circumstances into the son of a king. I may still be crippled on the outside, but I'm no longer crippled on the inside. And this is one bubble that's never going to burst. How slow? We had hoped. It is true. The Lord has risen. That's a hope worth having.